for himself or something during this period because he simply can't stand the boredom of doing nothing. What he's really suffering from usually is the boredom of being nothing, of having no internal integrities, inspirations, dedications, or ideals. Sometimes the older person will go into education or something of this nature and may, in some ways, compensate for earlier wasted years. But in the most part, the individual who has gone through the first 60 years of life without any realization of the real meaning of life is not going to do very well thereafter. He is tired, worried, disillusioned, disappointed, has two or three broken homes behind him, and children that have gone off to live their own lives and depend on him only for a little cash now and then. This is not a fulfillment. So this ladder that we are trying to climb is filled with these decisions, a series of decisions on major levels of personal life. Not decisions all made at once, but decisions that must be made when the environment and the personality itself are in challenge and which have to be reconciled in one way or another. And then comes the last of the seven according to the ancients, and that is Saturn, which is supposed to rule from the reign of Jupiter to the end of life. Well, Saturn is not necessarily just an end symbol. Saturn is a very interesting situation. Saturn is the dignity of age. Now, age is an experience that every individual has to pass through if they live that long. And age can be, to most, a disappointment. It can be the loss of the power to continue habits that have become traditionally important. Age is a way which blocks our doing the things in our older years that we enjoyed in our teens and twenties. And as we may never learn to enjoy anything else, age becomes a very barren experience. The individual in his older years is very largely dependent upon the doings of his younger years. He is dependent upon good memories, close friends, children, grandchildren. He is depending largely upon his virtues and his abilities to enjoy the experiences of his own life. He may go into art or music. He may start a little business or a hobby shop of his own. But for the most part, in this period of life, he is depending very largely for happiness upon what he has in his mental and emotional savings account. He is depending on memories that enrich and not memories that impoverish. He is dependent upon releases of consciousness within his own nature. He is becoming dependent upon philosophy, upon art, upon music and ethics. And if he has no enjoyment of these things, then about all he can do is sit in front of a television system and watch the sport programs so that he can behold a number of young people mauling each other in one way or another. Now, to come through 60 or 70 years of life with nothing more important than to waste time watching commercials on TV is sort of a disappointment to all, including God. It's one of those things that is a story of a wasted life in a wasteful world. It is something that does not work out well, but it will continue this way and not work out well unless the individual starts at an earlier time to make it work out better. He has to recognize that these steps on the ziggurats, the stairs leading up these towers of contemplation, are things that he has to ascend one by one and do something about them. He lives in a magnificent world, which is being destroyed by his own stupidity. He is surrounded by opportunities to think and to dream and to hope, and he just sits around doing the things he always has done, read the evening paper, scan the Wall Street Journal, and report on the present crisis in the money markets. This will be, and yet in a very short time, he won't be here. He may not live to see what happens in the stock exchange. And even if he does, it won't mean much. And what the daily reading of it won't help him in a bit. but he hasn't done the things that are necessary. Every person who reaches near the 70th year should be a person with a tremendous desire to use the future for the good of all concerned, including himself. A desire to enrich life, to be able to say that when the curtain goes down, something has been done. Something to make the individual proud of himself in a correct way. A gentle sense of fulfillment that he has contributed to the good of others, has contributed to the good of his world, that he has been able to so improve his own nature that he can pass out of this world a better person than he was when he came in. Very often now it seems that he is worse at the end than when he came in. Because when he came in, he was a beautiful little kid, wonderful, with great big eyes. Everybody loved him, and he was a joy to behold. But somewhere in the world of life, he got over this. And I have known a few, however, who didn't get over it. It can happen, and also without being in his second childhood. It is perfectly possible for an older person to be the most beloved member of a family, or the most useful citizen in the community, or the patron of everything that is good and fine in life. It is perfectly possible for the older person to be busier than he ever was in life before, doing things that he never had time to do before. If he had heavy responsibilities and had a family to take care of, he can excuse himself for lack of nobler incentives. But when these things have been finished and he stands free to do as he pleases, it is important that he displeases to do something that is worthwhile, so that his life comes to a noble climax rather than a dismal disintegration of faculties. There is no reason why a great many people should come into second childhood at all. The reason is they have never disciplined, never cultured, and never determinedly unfolded their own resources. The mind has not gotten tired and now failed because it was worn out. It has been left to gradually deteriorate and fail from lack of use. The lack of the use of faculties for the purposes for which they were intended is one way to determine the disintegration of memory, imagination, and all of the fine art instincts in the person. Now, according to this, and what has often been called the seven ages of man, according to Shakespeare, we have the story of a life leading from the cradle to the grave. Now, if this was all there was to it, the life would be pretty much of a mess anyway. If the highest thing that the individual could hope to do is to die rich, the whole purpose of human existence is lost. If the individual also can say fairly that if when he's gone he'll never be missed, that's just as bad. There is no reason why these dismal circumstances should be associated with the development of human beings. The individual should be active to the end of life, and if he is, he will be free from those semantic ailments which very often turn into chronic physical ailments simply because they represent uncorrected attitudes in the mind to begin with. The individual who is busy, conscious, doing the things that are necessary, will have a mind that will serve him as long as he needs it. But if he is also in a mood where he has not done anything to protect or perfect himself, he is likely to be rather a lonely character. Now, if by some chance also, as is quite possible, the older years are handicapped in many ways, or in some special way, there is still in the mature person an inner life which is not dependent upon modern external circumstances. An individual who is no longer capable of activities of any importance, if they have had the activities, if they've done the things, will have a very wonderful series of constructive memories which cannot be taken away from them. They will have the satisfaction of knowing what has been accomplished. They will also have the mastery over the unfortunate reflexes of their own natures and will have peace of heart and peace of soul. The theory behind it in the ancient was ancient world was, live well and die with a good hope. And this is the mystery of the ladder with its seven rungs. Now, according to modern times, something has been added to this picture. We now have the addition of three planets that were unknown to the ancients, or if they were known, were at least not listed exoterically for the benefit of the public. One of these, the first to be discovered, was Uranus. Uranus, which was first named after the King of England and then finally became the name for one of the ancient gods. Uranus, and then came Neptune, and then finally came Lowell Pluto, now generally just called Pluto. These three are all, we might say, mystery planets. But they take the 70 years, which was based upon the idea of the 70 elders, and also all of the stories of the apostles of Christ, and so on. But the 70 was the group number for those who planned the edition of the King James Bible. The 70 years has now been stretched to 100 years. And the 72 years, which originally was regarded as the maximum expectancy of life, is no longer the maximum expectancy. So beyond Saturn, with its aging factor, and with its gradual moving away from the material concerns of life, there are now three other steps that have come in. And, incidentally, those attaining 90s or are becoming centenarians are no longer completely unusual. The life expectancy is greater than ever before in history. In spite of the wars, in spite of the plagues, we live longer than we ever have before. This seems to be telling us something. There are three more of these rungs to the ladder, making a ladder of 10 rungs, which now becomes more or less the full expectancy of human life, or the possibility of it under normal conditions. But in these three new planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, lie the principles and processes of a kind of immortality, a growth beyond the ordinary growth of things. Then the individual who is able, therefore, to develop the inner resources of consciousness without dying in the process. It is now possible to develop the extrasensory perception bands. It is possible for intuition to come into play, for higher consciousness purposes to be understood, and perhaps most of all, a moral sense of responsibility for the consequences of action. In these newly discovered planets, therefore, we have something that breaks the cycle. We have something that goes on beyond, something which may, in the course of time, also make a major change in the life expectancy of all human beings and the life expectancies of nations. But at least there are now things by which we begin to say, after we get to a certain point in the material concerns, we must now turn to the internal. We have explored the seven continents. We have civilized or destroyed the civilizations of most of them. We have imprisoned and captured practically all the resources of nature. We are on the edge of a world of exhausted resources, a world of exhausted morals, and a world of exhausted finances. We are on the very edge of something that has to change. And this change seems to be implied by these three planets, which were unknown to the ancients. And these three planets become, perhaps, we hope at least, the symbols of a life beyond the purposes of our present life pattern. We were born to grow up. We grew up to grow older. We raised families. We did the work of the world. We retired our Social Security and Medicare. And that was it. But now there's something else coming in. There's something that's beginning to tell us that this is only the end of a level. This is not the end of our evolution. It is not the termination of growth, or necessarily the immediate disappearance that we might depart from this earth. We are now having many people in their 80s. We have named some people, quite a few, in their 90s. And we have more and more of the other value of these three, namely insight, inside understanding. The individual who grew up on the outside until he could retire with a fair chance of maintaining himself must now grow up on the inside. Because regardless of what happens here, this world is not his home. It is only a place where he is spending a little time, in some cases as a servant, in some cases as on a vacation. But in any event, this isn't the end of it. Nor is this the end of the need to grow. We are reaching the point where growth is no longer physically useful. We are now using sciences badly because we do not know how to use them. And most of the ones we are discovering now, we would be best without. We are therefore going into a dead end. We are trying to keep ourselves busy by artificial means. We are trying to forget our own ignorance by claiming a few discoveries which we will use to kill each other. But now there is gradually coming about the realization that a divine plan is also working here, and that gradually all of these experiences through which we are passing are building towards a better world than we have ever known. We are beginning to realize that in one of two ways we've grown up, either through dedicated effort or through a series of mistaken problems that have disappointed and disillusioned and hurt us. Out of disillusionment comes a new search for reality. Out of the battle of cults comes a new search for religious truths. Out of an unsettled financial condition comes a desire for simple living without worry or contention. And out of political chaos must come a simple method of self-government by which the individual does not need to be constantly corrected for his misdeeds. So little by little, the new world is coming. And with it is coming these three orbits of giving us a potential of 30 years beyond what the ancients understood. We have a longer time to do the things that need doing. Perhaps it's because the things that we need to do have been neglected so very long. Or perhaps we need to do things we didn't know we needed to do in the past. We thought we were doing what was necessary. But now comes the realization that we all have a job right here. Reasonably intensive, and that as long as we are able to think, there's something to be thinking about. As long as we realize there is a need, we can contribute in some way to the fulfillment of that need. Everywhere there is new opportunity to grow and new opportunities to serve. We have greater privileges to help to bring about the golden age we look for. So that the new perspective is that the life of the person, first of all, is eternal. The ancients knew this, but we some way got out of it. We mistook the fact that we saw his physical terminations and assumed, therefore, that all physical symbols are literal. They must represent exactly what we see. The truth of the matter is that the ancients never believed that. There are very few ancient people who were ever really materialistic, because they had not come to that point in which they became so delighted with their own stupid works that they didn't think there could be anything in space as good as what they have. That the individual was here, was blessed beyond all words, and there was nothing afterwards except the tomb with a few little handfuls of his private property thrown in for luck. Actually, the whole world is changing. The boundaries of life are changing. The more we think of immortality, the longer we will live. The more we live according to the laws of integrity, the better our health will be over long, expanded periods of time. When we keep the emotional virtues of life, there will be more happiness for everyone. And when we raise children properly, we will have children we will love and enjoy as long as they live. All of these things bring about a new world. Thoughtfulness, kindness, generosity, patience, understanding, insight, all these, if they are developed early in life, or as early as we find them. They all contribute to this tomorrow which we are now longing for. We are beginning to realize as never before that things have to change, that there has to be a better way of doing things than we are doing, that we are never bringing about peace by one war after another. We should have known that. The Medes and the Persians knew it 5,000 years ago. But we were slow of learning. One thing, we immediately discarded the wisdom of the ancients because it conflicted with the ignorance of today. We didn't want to know what they thought, because if we really accepted their thoughts and their codes, we'd have to live better. And it was better to forget them than change our own habits. So we have ignored all of these ideals that could have been a great help to us and might have saved several great wars. But now comes the realization, as never before, that there is such a thing as peace. There is such a thing as human beings becoming constructive individuals in a world plan for ordered existence. There is a possibility, therefore, to liberate the individual from the tyranny of the unimportant, to give the person an opportunity to grow. Moore, in his Utopia, makes this point very clearly. People not burdened by the misdeeds of themselves and each other, or not striving after goals which are worthless and bring only misery, people who live quietly have time to think. They have time to read good books. They have time to be with their children. They have time to serve social purposes. They will help to maintain the integrities of nations rather than be forced out as soldiers to be killed for systems that they do not even believe in. So there's always a new way coming. And in the discovery of new planets, we find a series of factors. Uranus, for instance, shows us the use of machines. It begins to tell us the possibilities of the proper use of labor-saving devices. The morality, however, has not been developed. You cannot make a successful machine unless you are dedicated to the use of it for constructive purposes. Machines cannot make better people. Machines can only enslave people. But machines used by intelligent people can advance the state of civilization. They can end once and for all the tyranny that must arise when a world as complex as ours is left to its own devices. We don't have to have wars. We don't have to build nuclear weapons. But we do have to have integrities in ourselves, not to destroy machines, but to see that they are used for the common good. But invention is part of the Uranian change that has come to us since the days of the ancients. The next thing that has been noticeable to us, perhaps, is Neptune. And Neptune is a very mysterious and strange planet. But it has some very interesting bywords or terms which are associated with it. Neptune is a planet devoted to the search for the innermost. Neptune is the one planet that helps us to understand the causes and effects with which we are affected. Neptune can show why we suffer, and by so doing indicate how to cease to suffer. Neptune represents a universe of invisible principles which must be obeyed. It brings us closer and closer to the divine plan of things. It increases the extrasensory perception band. It results in all kinds of researches into the great immortalities of existence. Neptune also has to do with the development of certain extra faculty perceptions of the mind, by means of which we become aware and become capable of estimating, interpreting, and using laws of nature which we never knew before. Neptune will contribute to us a tremendous, intensive examination of nature, so that we can learn for once and for all the reasons for the wonders that we see. Neptune can help us to trace every one of the wonders of life to its divine origin. It can help us to live according to these wonders, according to these rules and these principles, which are so important to our ultimate destiny. And then we come finally to the rulership of Pluto. Pluto is a member of our family that has just more or less appeared out of the researches at Flagstaff. But Pluto was an ancient god of the underworld and was also the Roman god of wealth. Well, the world of wealth is the underworld. The world of wealth is this world in which all good things are sacrificed and everything that is done ends in punishment. But Pluto also has a different meaning. Pluto has to do with the foregoing conclusion, what is to take the place of wealth? What are we going to do instead of trying to make money? What are we going to do to prevent money from ruling the men who rule us? How are we going to prevent money from being the cause of war? We call the cause of injustice. How are we going to prevent bringing up generations of children to believe that money is the only thing that's important, and thus ending in endless crime? I think that the answer probably was pretty much the way it was a couple of hundred years ago when they first began to study it but didn't know much about the planet. And that is that in some way, Pluto is the planet of retribution. It is the payment for the mistakes. It isn't a destroyer. It's just something that quietly, forcibly, inevitably points out that we're doing it wrong. Now, a lot of people hope that they can do it wrong and be happy. But this has not been one of the experiences we have known. The individual who makes the mistakes is finally unhappy, but of course he always has a quick answer that is someone else to blame for his unhappiness. The actual answer to the whole thing lies in the fact that everything has consequences. And in order to use Pluto, which is wealth, properly, we must find out what wealth is. Actually, wealth is nothing more or less than maturity protecting life. The individual who is truly mature is not in danger. The individual who understands the ways of human life correctly is not going to be an accumulator of wealth, but he is going to have an accumulation of values which can be shared equally with all peoples. Wealth has got to be understood, and wealth has got to be appreciated as a medium of exchange and not as a source of success. We have to realize that wealth is something we must outgrow before we lose what is left of our divine inheritance. Actually, the great change that is coming is to be brought about largely by Uranus, Pluto, and Neptune. These are the planets of the new age. These are the ways by means of which we can adjust to the future. And they also remind us very certainly and very definitely that there is no such a thing as a punishment for the sake of punishment. There is no such a thing as an ultimate fatality of things. We are all making little mistakes, but also making a great deal of progress by contemplating the results of our own mistakes. The only way we can ever hope to outgrow our troubles is to realize that we have caused them and face into the simple fact that we alone can change them. We are waiting for something to come down from heaven or for some wise person to administer the affairs of mankind. The wise person who will manage our affairs is locked within each of us. We are the makers of our own miseries, and we are the makers of our own regeneration from miseries. We are the source of the solution as well as the source of the ailment. And we are gradually coming to it right now, and within the next few years, there is obvious evidence that we are going to begin the great problem of taking the experiences of the past and interpreting them in terms of the needs of the future. We are not going to bury the ancients and say they were poor, benighted characters who believed in good conduct. We're going to realize that they were the right ones. And we're going to find that in the wisdom of the ages, we have plenty of material to assist us in creating a better world. And as we create better worlds, we have better people. And they, in turn, create still better worlds. When things start moving in the right direction, the momentum can increase. But the momentum must always begin with a little child opening its eyes upon a strange world and depending entirely upon the love of mother and father to survive. And if that is betrayed, that child will become part of the great liability. But if these young people are brought up with understanding and insight, and if the older generation realizes its own limitations and seeks to push forward into the future, those young people who must be the hope of the future, and will spend more time building better futures for their children and grandchildren than trying to be more comfortable in themselves and ignore their responsibilities to society. It's all going to work out, and it's going to be good for everybody when it's finished. But in the meantime, wherever we are in the cycle of age, from the beginning to the end, we have to work to understand and correct the problem that is focused upon us by our own place in our own life cycle. At certain ages, we have to face certain problems. If we face each problem as it arises, the next problem is comparatively easy. But if we neglect the first, we'll have trouble all the way through to the end. We've got to find better ways of starting young people out in life. We've got to find better parents. We've got to get over the idea of leaving the child on the doorstep. We've got to get out of the idea that we have to blow the child up in order to conquer the country that it belongs to. All these things are the great perversities of life. And as long as the human being, either the dictator or the private family tyrant, will continue to hurt for personal gratification, there is no answer. But if you hurt long enough, you hurt yourself. And then final time of things, the abused turn. The abused stomach turns on us. The abused body rebels against us. The abused society turns against its masters. But it's all part of a wonderful story. And every story that exists in nature and is supported by nature and is fulfilled through nature is a success story. It shows that no matter how stupid we are or how long we stay that way, nature is going to outwit us. And in the long run, we're going to become wonderful, intelligent, and useful citizens in the universal empire. With this thought in mind, we can face the day maybe with a little better hope.